Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Lawrence?
No, it's more complicated. So we're...
Sure, I'll do that.
Who is he?
No, I don't know who he is! Right. So we got that.
Kryptonite!
Ah! That's too hard! Start over!
Alright, let's record.
That's really good. I did a good job.
So, welcome back to the Brotherhood of Batman. This is part two of Venom and Four of a Kind. I'm Jake. I made the list.
I'm Ben. I'm everyone's favorite.
My favorite. Yeah. I'm Aaron. I'm doing recording and editing.
We're glad to be back. We got another book to talk about. You guys listened to part one, you've probably heard our Geekin' Week, so let's just jump into the book review, right?
Sweet. All right,
Ben.
So, hello. So, if you've listened to any episodes of this, you know that I'm super excited for bright colors and super villains. So, this next book is called Four of a Kind. And to be real honest with you, it's not even a trade as much as it is just four annuals from four different titles of the Batman series. So, we get to meet for the first time in our continuity journey Poison Ivy, I'm only a little excited, the Riddler, Scarecrow, and Man-Bat. Each adventure, we get to see a little bit of Batman's first year. We get to learn some things that don't necessarily go with the continuity we've been doing, and Jake will stress out and freak out all about that. But most of all, we just get to talk about Poison Ivy, so let's get into it.
Yeah, so this is, like Ben said, four annuals. Three of them were from December 1994 across... three different Batman titles. The fourth book in the series was an annual from 95. But all collecting year one stories, all retelling origins of these characters' first appearances and their first run-ins with Batman. I hunted this book down. This when we started the podcast, I did not own this trade, but I had heard of it, and I knew that it was a thing that we were going to need to read and talk about. And I broke my golden rule. I'm big into purchasing comics either through your favorite local comic book store or through comic shows and supporting the small business of vendors and all that kind of stuff. This isn't an easy book to find. I did order it offline. It was a hard decision, but I knew we needed a Poison Ivy first appearance.
Thank you. He spent $400 on it. So
not true, Sarah. That's not true.
$3.95. So the irony of you buying this book at a higher price is I own two of the four
two
issues.
Two of them?
I own the Riddler one, too. I have Poison Ivy, and I might have given the Riddler one away because I did a purge of a lot of my comics, and you would have caught that one if I gave it away.
Yeah.
But anyways, so first up, let's just go, should we go one by one? Let's just go in order.
You want to go one by one? So the first one is Shadow of the Bat Annual number 3. It is just titled very simply, Poison Ivy Year 1.
What I found interesting about this book versus the other three in the collection is that the other three were very much true origins. There was the villain talking about themselves, or you saw their how they became to be. With Poison Ivy, we get her first encounter with Batman. Her first two encounters with Batman.
She's comfortable with herself. She's being a villain.
And her outfit, thank the Lord. Oh, that reminds me. I didn't do my favorite outfit from the previous book. But it doesn't even matter because all my favorite outfits are reserved for Poison Ivy's villain outfit. We've got the bustier made out of leaves. We have the tights with the leaves coming up the side. We got the little, what are you doing on your phone while I'm living my best life over here? Are you captioning things about me? Are you recording me?
No, I'm not.
We're all recorded right now.
No, he was writing writing down things I was saying.
Not what you were saying. Go back.
Okay. So we've got her little green booties. We've got the red luscious hair. Anyways, so I found it really interesting that we got to see her first real adventure. And when I read all four books, I was like, you know what? I kind of wish I got her real origin. And I thought about it. I was like, no, she got an adventure. And the other three got like, this is how I came to be.
Yeah.
Where she got half a page where you see her being experimented on. And you see her thing. But throughout her first adventure and her two fights with Batman, She talks about her issues with men, and she talks about plants and all these things. But it was different than the other Ivies I've read. Like, it really seemed like she just wanted money. Like, it didn't seem like she was doing it for the plants, which is the ivy that we get in a lot of stories. It didn't seem like she was doing it because she hates humans, which she does in a lot of stories. This, to me, unless I misread it, seemed like she just kind of wanted money.
Well, I think it starts there, but I think we end a springboard for the ivy maybe that we're a little bit more familiar with.
In the end, when she's in...
She's a little bit more hateful. She's a little bit more like, I'm going to make them learn, and, you know, they're going to be punished for what they've done, da-da-da-da-da. But in the beginning, you're right. She's kind of looking around. She wants to steal some money. She's bored. She's interested that Batman intrigues her as a possible...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if he's a possible mate, but he's a...
She
lusts for him. Mm-hmm. She wants him. We get to Bruce, and he doesn't have a full bat lab yet in the bat cave. And I was like, God, Ben's going to go off. We don't have the full bat cave. We're going backwards in time. This is going to be...
So, yeah.
And then there's a ball, and we've already talked about balls and galas, and it's
going to go back. I have gala right there.
But this is a gala that's overthrown by a strong woman. Okay, so let me just get on my soapbox for the next 20 minutes. We get something continuity-wise that bothered me, where one of the henchmen's like, oh, I've worked for the Penguin, which is fine, we don't need to read everybody. But he's like, I've worked for the Joker. I'm like, okay, really, have you? Because this is within the first year. And the Joker, as we've read it, was the end of Batman's first year. Yet someone's already worked with him, so that's misleading. And I don't think the Joker really lets people not work for him anymore. I'm pretty sure they all just kind of die.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they all perish.
So the fact that there's some dude who, quote-unquote, worked with the Joker, and Poison Ivy ends up offing him, I was like, all right, so right now we have this bad chick. Like, she's dangerous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She kills a lot of people. Well, she kills a couple people in this book.
Oh, at least four, and throws plenty
that
out.
That she would have.
Yeah, that could be. I agree with everything so far. There are a lot of continuity issues with these four books. In the way that we are reading, it's going to be difficult to find a smooth transition between every single book. This book actually seems like maybe it happens earlier than we are right now in his career. But at the same time, it mentions Penguin and Joker as established villains. So it's kind of hard to... hard to place. But like we discussed last episode, I don't think we need to talk about it in depth again, but we're creating our own continuity, and you have to decide what you want to allow into your continuity and when. There's going to be, as we read these four stories, it's going to happen multiple times. We're going to have characters we have not been introduced to that don't line up. But if you read this as a Poison Ivy story, if you exclude a few lines of dialogue, I still think it fits really well.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that story. I had issues with the whole book, and it was minor issues. I thought it was going to be
like all four of them,
something to tie them together, and there wasn't. And I was kind of let down at the end when there wasn't something to tie them together.
Yeah.
And they were just four standalone, because then I was annoyed because I read them all at one time, and I would have spaced them out.
It was definitely just a collection of four books.
It was just a collection of four books, and I didn't know that going into it. And that might just be reader error, but I enjoyed the story. I thought there was some good...
I'll warn you next time it happens.
No, I don't need to be warned. It's all right. I thought Poison Ivy is a great character. I thought her plan to kiss Bruce with the poison, and the only way to get the anti-venom to stop the poison ended up being getting kissed a second time, which she doesn't do. But she does with Batman is fantastic, because he accidentally gets the anti-venom and then saves himself. And I thought that
was
really cool.
But she doesn't figure it out.
She doesn't know, and I thought that was cool.
Cool, but also, I love her so much. But, girl.
Idiot.
How did you not know?
You're so stupid. He's sweating.
Right. But at the same, and we also get another laugh from him, which last episode with the Venom, we talked about the laugh, and here he's laughing after she kisses him and reveals her plan. But in a way, she defeated herself. Like, she had him.
Yeah.
Like, this was an she almost got him moment, if you will. So,
if they had been different people, both Batman and Bruce would be dead. I'm gonna throw it out there, because I think it's something we need to talk about with this one particular. I'm really glad that the way that we read it, that the anthology started with this one. I think it's the strongest of all four. The art is unbelievably beautiful.
Oh my god. Oh,
it's pretty good, yeah.
It is some of my favorite art we've come across so far.
Funny you mention that, because I'm currently looking at my favorite page we've read so far.
The sex page?
I don't like how you just defined it as such. But now I feel gross about that, so I don't like that because of consent and things.
So,
okay, all right.
Oh, talking about the shower.
Yes, we have to talk about the shower. And
we should, because
I wrote notes about it, and it.
Sexy Bruce Wayne. I was so into this whole book. I was like, this is literally everything I've ever read. Sexy Bruce Wayne, a badass bitch. Like, this is what I came here for.
So the book's...
I have to wait another 12 episodes before I get another one of these.
The art style, the artist has an amazing sense of figure drawing.
I agree. Well, I like said. The figure drawing, well, too. Said.
But it is... It's actually really remarkable for being a mid-90s book. Poison Ivy's costume later in comic books is crude and over-sexualized, in my opinion.
I mean, she's still drawn like a comic book female made by males, but I agree.
But she looks like a real woman
here. She looks like a woman, and she's wearing clothing. It's clothing made out of
leaves. She has tights. She's wearing a corset.
This outfit would stay on. There's outfits she wears that look like they're glued to her, whereas this looks like an actual...
I see what you're both saying, yeah.
Batman is sexualized as well.
Yeah, he is.
He's drawn very... I mean, there is many butt drawings of men as there are women in the story. Like, but I feel like it was a very balanced book. Like, I did not feel...
I actually went back and looked. I was like, was this written by a woman? Like, that's how much I wasn't offended by this book.
But even, like, the positions that the artist decides...
I wasn't offended. I thought it was hilarious. I looked at it and I was like, what the hell is going on here?
I'm saying...
And Alfred turns the water to cold, which I thought was fantastic.
We're going to talk about the shower.
Right on his crotch. No, I'm saying I wasn't offended in, like, the best way possible. Like, there's been so many books we've read where I've been like, ugh. And even the other female character in here, Bruce Wayne's date, flips Poison Ivy.
Oh, yeah. She kung fu throws her into a table.
Right. Covered in mushrooms, which, how gross and vivid was
that? Yeah, are mushrooms gross? Yeah.
All right. So we got to talk about the shower. Because of how attractive... Poison Ivy is. She uses not only her pheromones, but she dresses very elusive. She uses...
Can I read it?
Yes. She uses her...
Riddle me this, Batman. What are the chilliest 12 inches in the world?
That was amazing. So after his first encounter, Bruce goes back home and is greeted by Alfred, and there is an interchange there.
Apart from the cape, not a scratch, Alfred. Unless you count a slight touch of poison ivy.
A prankster in the park?
No, a very deadly lady. She killed one man, made another leap from six stories up. Very strange.
All this time, he's undressing?
Ooh. Yeah, no, he's literally undressing. And then Alfred's like, stranger than the Catwoman? By a whisker, but don't.
And then, to emphasize... Bruce is giving us shampoo commercial here. He is stroking both of his hands back through his hair, and he says, you know how some women are beautiful, but they just don't turn you on? Alfred, my father figure. Anyways, continue. Well, Poison Ivy is both beautiful and sexy. Then we see the water hitting his genitalia. We don't see the gents, but we see the litter squirting on it, and then he... I'm so sorry. I'm done. I've gone down. Anyways, so he's describing all this to Alfred, and Alfred's outside the shower, and he turns into cold, like Aaron said, and then you see Bruce, like, squirming, and it's just very cute.
He does exactly that.
Anyways.
It was some of the funniest... Okay, I can see that happening, Art, except... Why the hell is Alfred standing outside the shower? Come on.
Is there too close?
Have some space.
They have no
Where
boundaries.
Is your intercom? Where's your intercom? Don't you have one from Venom? Come on. We know that you have something. Let's go.
So when Bruce is pleasing himself in the shower, he can at least be outside the door when you're talking to him, not the glass where we can see his bum. You're just looking at him.
The artist actually had some very horrifying, like, the description of the... So Poison Ivy is able to poison some people in a way that they sprout mushrooms. out of their body and out of their orifices. It actually kills one person. They choke on the mushrooms that are growing inside.
It's a beautiful picture.
It's horrifyingly descriptive, but not like being like over the top and like bloody. It's just like, wow, this is really kind of disturbing imagery that they're putting in here. Like the artist Brian Apthrope, I don't know him. I don't know what else he's done, but I would love to see more of his comics.
I have one more thing to say, and then I'm not going to talk for the next three. So I not only did we get like a legit story from her, but we saw so many of her different powers and so many of her different villain methods.
Yeah, I'd like to read more. I thought she was good. I'd like to see her again.
Yeah, this is a great entrance into a character on par with Joker's entrance so far. Like, we have two really good supervillains right now. With these two.
Let's get some more.
All right,
so the second one, the second story was about Riddler.
Oh, I like this one too.
This one was written by Chuck Dixon, one of my favorite writers.
So are we doing a recap for each one of these?
No, I think let's just
jump. We're just okay. Jumping.
So yeah, so the story opens up with Riddler is
Edward Nygma.
Edward Nygma is retelling. He's the one retelling the story. Of his first...
I know, you jackass. My glasses are sticky. If you listen to the previous episode, Ben is licking my crystal glass right now. And
it's caked in sugar goo. Anyways, Enigma.
Me too. What just happened?
Enigma is retelling his first run-in with Batman.
And this is very much an origin. He's talking about how he came to be, doesn't he?
He talks about his childhood.
Boy Wonder. We get the whole thing, and he's in his little leotard.
I thought this was my favorite one out of the bunch.
It was, okay.
Yeah, I really like this one. I thought him retelling the story, you can tell he's in Arkham. They don't tell you he's in Arkham. But he's curled up in the fetal position. He's talking to himself.
To a mirror. You see the mirror for sure, yeah.
You see the mirror later. I didn't catch it right away, but he's talking to himself. He's talking to a mirror.
I didn't catch it either.
Yeah, I didn't either. But he's like talking in third person. He's talking in first person. He's going back and forth. He retells his childhood, the bullying that he suffered, the ridicule he suffered, the fact that he studied magic and tricks and riddles, and he spent time. He didn't just get them right away. He spent time. He developed tricks. He cheated. He used shortcuts. But he used what he needed to do to come off at the top. But it didn't work. He wanted it to work. He wanted to be loved. He wanted to be special. And it didn't work for him when he was a kid. And I like that. I like that he failed. I like that he didn't succeed in that. And then his ability to keep trying is what turned him into the villain. The ability that whatever you're going to do to me, I'm going to take. Yeah. And it's going to make me stronger because I'm going to take and study martial arts. I'm going to study kung fu. Yeah. I'm going to study the art of whatever the dancing moves that he did was.
I think that's the scarecrow.
All right. Never mind.
But no, you're right.
Very similar.
There were a lot
he
of
did
things
some of the
similar.
Same similar things. Yeah. But he's going to take all that and he's going to make himself stronger. And he's going to become this villain, and he's going to become the embodiment of whatever will trick. And he's willing to throw out direct clues and say, I'm smarter than you, and if you beat me, fine.
Yeah.
But here's where it is, and he succeeded a couple times, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
Like, he succeeded. He tricked Batman. He tricked the police. He got away with millions. He had some henchmen that he developed. And I thought it was great.
He had successful robberies, but he was bored with his successful robberies.
Right.
All he wanted to do was play the game and challenge people.
He made it harder for himself.
We've read as comic book readers, we've read the evolution of villains before, and we've seen the battered child becomes a villain because they've had this horrible... Nygma, he had normal bullying situations, but he decided as an early child to cheat his way into being clever and being thought to be smarter than he was. And it really actually made a lot of sense for his evolution. It wasn't a vat of chemicals. It wasn't being shot up with plant hormones. It wasn't being tortured by the school bullies. It was he wanted to He had questions, and he wanted to play the riddle game, and he didn't stop. And it drives his megalomaniac. It creates a crazy person. Like, he's crazy.
How do you divide 17 apples among 16 people?
Make applesauce!
He was so clear with his answer. Make applesauce! Sorry, that's great.
Robin always solves the riddles.
Because Robin's the best, but you won't let me read any Robin.
So I was really excited for this line in the book that I read, and I wanted to build it up a little bit. So he doesn't care about the money. He doesn't care about the jewels. He doesn't care about killing anybody. He's not out to maim anybody. He considers crime as a performance art. Mm-hmm. And our little brother Ben is a performance artist. The idea that you are that you're not Edward Nygma, you didn't go crazy, but that somebody could, and they could get wrapped up in the idea that what they're doing isn't really hurting anybody, because he's not maiming anybody, he's not violently attacking anybody. He goes after violins and he goes after money in a safe.
Does that stay like that? Like, does he stay pretty harmless?
I think he eventually will put people in peril to test your mental capacity to save
and
them.
And if you failed, you just weren't smart enough and it wasn't his fault.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that does. I think that's his character, is he isn't this evil mastermind that has an end game. The game is his point. He wants to play the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I like this book, and I liked how he gets to the end, and he sees the double mirror, and he breaks it, and he realizes no one's there, and he just dives into the insanity that he already had forged.
Yeah, because he spent an entire 20-page book confessing his life story and his maniac and his
cared.
And no one's there.
No one was there. The Arkham guards were on.
He's like shaking and crying, you know, cuddling himself, and he gets hauled away. And you find out that the guards left to take a break, and they are actually listening the whole time, but he doesn't know that. And I thought that was freaking fantastic. I liked that part a lot.
Yeah.
It was a good dramatic moment.
Yeah, I was caught off by it, and I was like, oh, that's really good. And he's
sad.
Insane. And he's
once again
developed
he wasn't getting attention.
Yeah, he didn't get the attention he craved. He didn't get what he needed. But it was there.
And I know costumes and picking outfit is your thing, Ben, but I wanted to make a note of it. I really liked that not only do we see the evolution of Edward Nygma becoming the Riddler, we see him develop his costume.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't make any mention of it, but like it starts with him wearing a sweatshirt with a question mark stitched to the front of it. And then later on he gets the unitard that has the questions on it. And then he dons a mask and he gets beaten up, but then he has the hat. And when he finally pulls his big job that he has his run-in with the Batman, he's got the green question mark suit and the hat and the cane, and he's come into his full characterization. And I liked the evolution of the costume there too.
Absolutely.
I thought that was really well written into it.
What I like is that these villains are themed. They all have their gimmick and they play by their rules. From the Joker to Poison Ivy and Riddler, they all have their rules. And one of these issues, I don't remember which one, but Alfred or someone, or Gordon, someone, sorry, not, I didn't pay that much attention.
Some old man.
Some guy is like, I'm tired of these themed villains. I'm like, really, buddy? Because I'm just getting interested.
This is what I came for.
This is what I wanted. Well, so I think it's cool because honestly, like, what annoyed me about the mob and the dirty cops and all that things is that they're just schmucks. Like, these people are psycho and they have their own thing. Like, Ivy's got her plants. Riddler, it's a game. Joker's doing this dance with Batman. Like, they have their very specific rules, and I'm excited to get to learn more.
Yeah.
Anything else for Riddler?
No, the end of the book has more continuity issues. We meet Two-Face, but he's not around yet, so ignore that. It was difficult because placing this book definitely happens the first 2 years, but reading it the way we are, we're waiting to meet Two-Face into a specific book. And you could put Two-Face earlier in this if you wanted to, but
no, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, so the third one is Scarecrow, Master of Fear. It's written by Doug Moench.
So you got Jonathan Crane, who is a scientist, doctor, he understudies at a university there. He's looking for a position. One is not available, so he creates an opening.
Murder! He murders someone!
Right. He does what he's got to do. And in the field of higher education, you might have to take some shortcuts.
I'm uncomfortable with this based on your job.
I'm not taking shortcuts.
Yeah, so Jonathan Crane, obsessed with the psychology of fear, the story. Oh, so he's a lanky kid who walks awkwardly. The school bullies call him a scarecrow, says he looks like Ichabod Crane from Sleepy Hollow. This haunts him. He grows up very mistreated, very isolated.
It was similar to the Riddler story, except instead, you got confused, Aaron. It was that similar that instead, no, I'm serious. Like, it was very like that you're seeing the villain's story from childhood all the way through, which rubbed me a little weird because I'm like, okay, I get it. But his focus, his theme, if you will, was fear opposed to the Riddler's, which was the puzzles and the wanting to like outsmart people. But basically, they're the same character other than those things.
I did not like this one.
Why?
I almost didn't read it.
Why?
I started and I almost skipped through it.
I didn't think it was that bad.
When I went back and read this book for the second time, which I'm trying to do with all the books.
Well, your head ain't made of straw, you know.
I did skip it on the second read through of the book.
Why?
So there's a better, in my opinion, there's a better Scarecrow origin story.
Well, you chose this.
I liked it.
Yeah, I was cool with that.
I just kept getting thrown off. Okay, so things that threw me off. So they tried to emulate year one's Batman's inner dialogue written in cursive. Like he's writing the journal. And I thought the cursive, at least in the version we have, and it was really hard to read. Like,
especially when you're illiterate. No, I agree with you. It was really hard to read. It visually was blurred.
It was very, it was not a cursive style that
it was tough.
And so every time that I had a pause, I'm like, I don't know what word they mean here. Like, it took me out of the story, right?
No, I get it.
And they changed who was telling things, and I could be wrong, but I think one point they mess up and put the color of someone on the wrong spot, and that threw me. Was it they put Batman's on the Scarecrow? They did something.
I don't remember exactly, but
near the end,
they start to investigate Jonathan Crane and this mysterious Scarecrow because the Scarecrow leaves a piece of straw at this murder scene when he murders these four board members that voted him out of the university. Okay, so this guy wants to scare people to death. He's not trying to create a name. He's actually trying to become the best professor of the university. And then later on, he's trying to use extortion and be a pawn in somebody's extortion scheme.
Why did
he leave a piece of straw as
because
a calling
they're all
card?
Crazy.
I've got more. Just wait a second. He utters the word, "The last laugh will be mine," 3 times. Every time he says it, something else happens to him, and he goes crazier, and he's like, "But this time, the last laugh will be mine." No, you idiot. They're still laughing at you.
Stop it! Y'all so stupid!
Okay, the last big one. The one that really, that really pissed me off.
Why are you so mad about that?
I didn't like it. It bothered me. And he looks like he's got this weird horse face when he gets upset. Okay. So he decides maybe the second time that the last laugh is going to be his. He decides to go and research.
Were you counting the last laughs, Aaron? Because I was just like, meh, meh, Sleepy Hollow. I know that story.
Right. Okay.
Oh, Wizard of Oz. Great. I'm into it.
So he apparently doesn't know the story of Sleepy Hollow. That's fine. He has to discover it as a teen. Okay. I get it. He goes and reads it. And we get a retelling of the Sleepy Hollow story about Ichabod Crane falling in love and being awkward, and yet he dances marvelously. And so Jonathan Crane goes off of the cornfield and learns crane dancing kung fu all of a sudden.
He used against Batman later, which made me happy because I was very much like, why is he learning this? And then he fought Batman, and it's cool because he was so lanky and so weak, quote unquote, like physically weak, that it gave him a way to actually fight Batman. So I thought it was stupid that, like, how he did it, but I'm glad they gave him something other than just the fear gas.
That part didn't bother me.
But then why are you mad that he's dancing?
What bothered me?
It was like Kung Fu Panda Crane style or something.
So he takes the time to master Crane style Kung Fu.
What?
And then later he says, well, I finally finished The Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
The last laugh will be mine.
The short story, Legend of Sleepy Hollow, is 13 pages long. How long did this studious character who is obsessed, he leaves his apartment. The only trace that Jonathan Crane...
Flush.
Other than the straw that's
Aaron's
making Aaron
sneeze. Right, Aaron's allergic to the straw.
The only thing that ever led Batman to know that somebody lived in this apartment is the dusty bookshelves, because this man owns so many books. And
he kept with him. And when he gets money, he's like, I can buy more books. Like, he's so into it.
But it takes him the same amount of time to read a 13-page story of Sleepy Hollow that it does to master Crane Kung Fu.
Okay, first of all, some of us are just slower readers.
I'm a slow reader. I can't do 13 pages in Kung Fu at the same time.
I'm really surprised that you were this passionate about this.
I did not like it.
Garbage. You made us read absolute crap.
I am really kind of surprised you didn't like this.
This one I was still held on to. The Man Bat one, I'm like, meh. Like, the last two, I was kind of like, okay, meh. But I'm not, like, mad about it. And what I'm surprised that you didn't appreciate was how much it dove into Batman's method of scaring people and how Batman used fear. Because we've seen that in a lot of the other books, and he always talks about it. He's like, I need to scare the bad guys. Like, I have these techniques and everything, but I'm dressing like a bat to scare them. And that is his way of having the upper hand. And now we see a villain who has the ability to scare him. And
it on him.
Right.
I did like that. You're right.
That's what I took away from the book. The scarecrow stuff, the dancing, the whatever, was a little repetitive from Edward Nygma with me and a little silly. But the whole, like, fear thing I thought was really clever and on point with where we've come with Batman so far.
Wanted to open a topic of conversation, settle myself down a little bit about... So the taunting children theme, it's something we saw in Edward Nygma. They tease them. There's bullies in the schoolyard. Poison Ivy is manipulated as a teenager.
I feel like that may come from the artists and the writers.
That's exactly the note that
background.
I
feel like maybe they're projecting some of their own personal feelings about what life was like for them as kids growing up or teenagers growing up.
Yeah.
Being artistic, being silent, being quiet in class, being those kids that reflectively draw or write or do whatever they need to show it, maybe that's them projecting their personal histories into the
and
story.
And saying, don't be bratty children or someone's going to come get you. Like, the kids you torment are going to come get you when they're older.
Yeah, you hit exactly on what I was getting at, Aaron. Like, I think as... You know, we're grown adults. We're the three of us are grown men. We're comfortable in our own skins. We've accepted the people, and we're happy with the people that we are.
I'm doing a crane dance.
And we just completely didn't even notice because that's just Ben. Like, we're comfortable with Ben. But there was a time for all three of us, and I think there's a time for a lot of comic book readers where you at least... in our generations where you felt like an exile, where you felt out of the norm.
This very special episode of the Brotherhood of Batman was brought to you by Be Nice to Nerds.
So...
No, I think it's valid.
No, I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I feel like when you write something and draw something as meaningful as some of the art is and some of the story is in these characters and their background, you can't help but bring in your own personal feeling.
Right. I mean, that's what they tell writers is write what you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
And I think we see in the comic books that come out now, we see a different flavor of supervillain. It's one that's maybe more nightmarish, maybe more superpower.
No, I agree.
Like, there isn't the outsider as much as there used to be. I think that these villains that we're meeting right now are very much a product of that era of comic books trying to become a legitimate media.
What about the Man-Bat book? The Man-Bat series?
I themed my drink after it. I loved it.
To what you said earlier, Aaron, I believe, about he wasn't really a villain.
Yeah, I don't think he was a villain.
I don't think he was either.
I don't think he was a villain.
He was a victim.
We're all agreeing with that?
Yeah.
I think Batman went out because there was something that was causing a disturbance in the city. It was scaring people. Batman went out to figure out what it was.
He was dealing with something else. Batman was going after criminals, and the Man-Bat went into his cave. Like, Batman couldn't even be bothered with him.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. And Batman goes down to the cave, and he finds his freaking Man-Bat, and the dude scares the snot out of Alfred, knocks him out, does all this stuff. But he's doing what a bat does that's 400 times the size of a bat. The character... The guy, I can't remember his name.
Kurt Langstrom.
Okay, Langstrom. He had a hearing deficiency. He's trying to get engaged to this girl. He can't hear. He's trying to develop some serum or formula that will harness the power of the bat's echolocation and use that to merge with other species of animals to create a super animal. And he's so focused on that he's unaware of all his colleagues that are talking about him. He's unaware that his girlfriend is trying to get his attention, but she can't. He's unaware that he's missing dates and deadlines and dinners and drinks and things that he should be paying attention to, but he's not. And he spends all his time focused on developing his serum to create the Man-Bat, or to create this hybrid of a bat and whatever creature, that he's missing out on his life. Well, he ends up creating something and he gets rejected by his scientists, and he ends up, the only person he can test on is himself, which we see across all universes of comics. We see that in Dr. Connors.
Very Spider-Man villain.
Yes, we see that in Dr. Connors. We see that across everything in superhero land. There's no one to test on. Well, I'm a perfect subject.
Yes.
I have this issue with my arms. Yes. Let me make octopus ones.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Why not? Let's try.
But Man-Bat stands out in this universe as that scientist character.
Absolutely. Yeah. He stands out. It works for a little bit. It increases his hearing. It increases his ability to understand his girlfriend and relate to her until a point.
Where it doesn't work anymore.
It turns him into a giant monster.
Absolutely. And he shelters himself, and he does certain things, and he's no longer a productive member of society.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I can't see him as a villain because he wasn't out for malicious intent.
He's not a villain as much as a problem. Like, he's still dangerous.
He's a problem, yes.
He's the conflict, but he's not... The antagonist, I guess? Is he the antagonist?
I don't think there's necessarily an antagonist to the story. No, like, there's it's a man versus nature.
Right.
Story.
And Batman's trying to improve himself and make himself more bat-like throughout this with wings and things.
Yeah, this is a very clear parallel drawn in the story that Batman's trying to chase down some villains that are utilizing the rooftops, and so he thinks... By upgrading his cape, into an actual glider wing system that he can achieve flight and become more. I think that the strength of this story comes from, and the reason that you could ever call Man-Bat a villain or a bad guy is he wants to better himself.
At any cost.
Just like Bruce Wayne does, but he takes the short route. He takes
the easy
way to do it.
Easy, but he's a genius and he created this thing. Like, it's an easy way in the sense of Batman taking the drugs and Venom, but he created that.
But Batman would have tested it and would have proven it before ever performing. When left with no options, he injected himself to prove that he was right. And he put everybody that he cares about and loves at risk. Batman does very similar things, but he thinks it through in a different way. I think this character was created to draw those parallels. I think that's the only reason that Matt, because he's not a super interesting character, and later in the comics they actually struggle to bring him around.
Yeah, I'm curious on how they would utilize bring him back.
And there's similar things like that.
Like a werewolf situation.
Yeah. I don't like that. Yeah.
And that happens. But the serum to create a Man-Bat exists. And that is the thing that ends up coming up the most. I think it was misplaced in a collection of villains.
Yeah. I think these four together are wackadoo.
I liked the three of them as villains. And then Man-Bat, I thought, was misplaced.
But I thought it was a good story.
Oh, I didn't. Absolutely. Really I enjoyed all reading all four of
Jake
them.
Jake did not enjoy reading Scarecrow.
Obviously. Obviously.
But I agree. And, like, Scarecrow, even Scarecrow being, like,
Scarecrow says, tee hee hee, at one point. Why the hell does he say tee hee hee?
I actually took a picture of that. That's one of my favorite things from that book. Because he tee hee hees in his caption, in his mind. He's tee-hee-heeing in his mind. Anyways.
Nice.
I thought that, like, as far as tears, I feel like Poison Ivy and Riddler are, like, A-list Batman villains.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like Scarecrow is, like, a B or C
list. Yeah, I would agree.
And I feel like Man-Bat is, like, a D-list. Like, I didn't
He's,
think...
like, an F-list.
Because he's not a villain.
He's not a villain. He's not in it that much. I didn't feel like
Jake villain. Shaking his head.
No, I'm kind of there with you. I
felt like it needed to be like Poison Ivy, Riddler, Penguin. Like it needed to be someone else.
Yeah, and we're actually gonna read Penguin next.
All right, what are your thoughts on this book?
As a whole, I'm glad we read it. It was most important to get Riddler into the storyline. I think it was important to get Scarecrow in the storyline. I think there's. Without being rude to Ben's favorite character, I think there are multiple entry points for Poison Ivy.
Oh, no, absolutely. I own this book, like the Ivy chapter, and I enjoy it, mostly for the shower Bruce Wayne. But also, there's a lot better. Like, she has a lot of...
But I really like this one. It was my favorite story of the four.
Yeah, the Poison Ivy was my favorite.
So what were you being rude about? I thought Riddler was your favorite.
No, I liked Riddler a lot. I thought Poison Ivy was the best villain.
I thought they were the strongest entries.
Of the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I like that we had...
I could have expanded on the two of them and been really happy.
Yeah. I like that we had Man-Bat at this point because I don't know where we would have gotten to Man-Bat. Man-Bat's the first episode of the animated series. Like... Man-Bat, they feel like they want to put him in the story all the time, but he doesn't necessarily have a natural fit.
He needs one episode, one issue.
And so I'm glad, and I feel very satisfied that we got the Man-Bat that we got. It's very well documented. This is not my preferred origin of Scarecrow. All
right, where are we going for next, Jake?
Well, you guys have to.
I would like to say that
I like this book a lot. I'm gonna override Ben. Ivy and Riddler origins were really great to introduce the characters. I thought Man-Bat and Scarecrow were good.
But yes.
The Man-Bat I did not feel was a villain. I thought it was misplaced if we're looking at a villain book. But overall, I thought it was really good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I would recommend it. Yeah.
I would just like to say, give me any D-list villain over any mobster, crooked cop storyline.
Or gothic.
Or gothic. Well, I don't like to talk about gothic. You can skip that episode of the podcast where I admit to not reading something.
No, but that's...
I'm kidding. It's great. Anyways, it was a great book. I loved it. Bright colors, woohoo, feminism, poison ivy. Great.
Where are we going next, Jake?
Feminism. Yeah, Jake, what are we reading next?
Okay. So, guys, as this podcast grows, as the timeline of Batman comics is always in flux, I found some books that relate a little bit earlier in the continuity than we are currently at. The further I get into Batman, the more I find is available to fit into a good storyline. We're going to read two books.
Okay.
We're going to read Batman Dead to Rights, which immediately follows up The Man Who Laughed. We find out what happens to Joker and Batman after their first meeting.
All right. I'm good with that.
And then we're going to meet a villain that was referenced in these books.
Two-Face?
Multiple times.
Two-Face?
Nope.
What?
What? We're going to read a one-shot. It's the first just standalone one-shot we're going to read. It's from Secret Origins Special Number 1. It's called The Killing Peck. We're going to meet Oswald Cobblepot.
Fantastic.
You can find The Killing Peck. It's actually a really hard book to find, but you can find it in Year 1, Two-Face and Scarecrow, remarkably. It's sandwiched between those two stories. Cool. For the Brotherhood
of Bat. We're not quite done, Jake. I came up with something I thought be great.
Uh-oh.
Exit Us Out.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no, man.
This is what he was working on earlier.
Yeah, this is... To bring us back to part of my childhood, and hopefully some of yours.
Oh, yes.
This is one of my favorite skits. And I reference this on a regular basis. So I'd like to reintroduce this to the Brotherhood of Batman, and we will call this the Wheel of Bat Morality.
It's that time again.
Did you do another one of our cute little skits?
Oh, our skits are cute.
It's time to learn today's lesson. And to find out what it is, we turn to the Wheel of Morality. Wheel of Morality, turn, turn, turn. Tell us the lesson that we should learn.
All right, everybody ready for the lesson we should learn?
Yes.
If it's the same one, oh God.
Wheel of Morality, turn. Tell us the lesson that we should learn.
Brains and brawn, kids. Learn brains and brawn.
Yay!
That's what you should lessons.
Do. All right, kids.
For the Brotherhood of Batman, I'm Jake. Please tune in. We appreciate it.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, I'm Aaron. If you got some brawns, great. If you got some brains, even better. If you got both, have a good night.
What?
Take care. Hopes of bitter plans, this city's way.